1320 AM, W248 DE, Wisconsin Rapids, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
CBS News Brief. President Biden unveils an executive order that partially shuts down asylum claims along the southern border. Governor Greg Abbott tells CBS News Texas,
I don't think they thought it out. They were just thinking that Biden needs to do something because the election is coming up and he's done nothing on the border. They were grasping at straws.
Governor Abbott pardoned a former Army sergeant who was convicted of shooting to death Black Lives Matter demonstrator Garrett Foster. The Travis County DA is asking an appeals court to reverse the pardon. Garrett Foster's mother, Sheila.
It is absolutely unacceptable to our family, and we will fight this until we get justice for Garrett.
Prosecutors say overwhelming evidence shows that Hunter Biden lied to hide his drug addiction so he could illegally buy a gun. The defense says there was no intent to deceive. CBS's Erica Brown.
Hunter Biden faces three felony charges. He's accused of lying on a federal gun form about his drug use. If convicted, he faces up to 25 years in prison.
CBS News Brief, I'm Jennifer Kuiper.
Seth here, host of Over the Back Fence. We're on the air live every Saturday from 11 a.m. to 12 p.m., taking your calls to buy or sell, talk local events, or whatever, only on WFHR.
Civic Media News. I'm Ella Saff. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Wisconsin Attorney General Josh Call has filed felony charges against two attorneys and an aide of former President Donald Trump. Kenneth Chesbro, Jim Troupas, and Mike Roman are facing charges of forgery for submitting paperwork falsely claiming Trump had won Wisconsin in the 2020 election. Call says the investigation is ongoing.
We're going to follow the facts wherever they lead. The investigation is not focused on any particular person, but on those facts and what information we can gather.
Each felony charge is punishable by up to 6 years in prison and fines up to $10,000. Chesbro, Troupas, and Roman are due in court on September 19th. A woman from Madison won the Ironman European Championship on Monday in Germany. It was 39-year-old Jackie Herring's first Ironman in 9 years. Herring is expected to race in the Ironman World Championship in September. And that's what you need to know. I'm Ella Saff, and this is Civic Media News.
This Entertainment Insider is sponsored by Progressive Insurance. Director Sam Taylor Johnson discusses why she took on the movie Back to Black, the life and music of the late singer Amy Winehouse.
Create the whole person, and so much of what we knew about her was said to us by the tabloids. And with our movie, it's really being with her as she creates the music, and that's a perspective I don't think we've necessarily felt.
Protect your family, your phone, and your furry friends with life, electronic device, and pet health insurance.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR, home for Matt Nair on air.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here today on the big program. Lots to get to, lots to talk about. Was thinking a little bit today about, well, some of the schemes of the GOP's past. Right now, one of them being front and center, the Project 2025 put forth by the Heritage Foundation that's going to make patronage great again. And it got me to thinking about, you know, Republicans come up with these plans and then, you know, we don't hear about them for a while. And then you see, well, the fruits, because one thing that the Republicans do is they come up with these schemes, they figure out how to fund them, and fund them wildly they do, and then they stick with it. And then they go and they hit on what is really important to them. And, you know, as I was thinking about Project 2025 today, I was remembering the Red Map Project. How many people remember back in 2008, the Republicans had this Red Map Project, which was short for Redistricting Majority Project, which, you know, their goal was to gerrymander the country. And they did. And they did a masterful job. It was launched by the Republican Senate Leadership Committee, the RSLC, back in 2010. The goal was to influence state-level elections and control those state legislatures, key state legislatures, so that they could push their, well, part of their bad agenda, but more importantly, get there before the 2010 census report, which would give them really the power to gerrymander for the next decade. And look, by winning these key legislative states, what you got in 2010 was a Republican Party that did get the control to redraw the lines. They got to draw the maps. They got to choose their voters. And boy, did they. And you saw that these districts being drawn were rather cartoonish. And this allowed the Republican Party to gerrymander district maps in a way that benefited them. Quite simple. They had the power to rig the thing for themselves, and they did. And it's helped them secure more favorable boundaries for their candidates for future elections. And understand, I look at like Ohio, where there hasn't been a shift since that 2010 gerrymandering. They've maintained their supremacy. Not because their ideas are better. Oh my God, Ohio's corrupt as all can be. But the game's already rigged. The winner is decided before the first vote is cast. So all of this whining, the elections are rigged, kind of falling on deaf ears. Now, I look at the Red Map Project as something that was wildly successful in that it did exactly what it was supposed to. It gave Republicans the advantage, gave them the opportunity to gain the advantage and hold on to power. And it's what they've done. Now, originally they targeted, what was it? Ohio, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, Michigan, Florida, North Carolina. And you think about those blue states, the blue wall, if you will, Pennsylvania, Ohio, Michigan, Wisconsin. Back then, Ohio was somewhat of a swing state. Now, red. Why? Gerrymandering. Pennsylvania, the one election you actually had, Democrats got like 1.5 million more votes and lost a majority of the seats because of how the creative mapping was done. And Wisconsin, well, look what you ended up there in 2011. Chaos. And it's all been negative. Their policies that they've pushed have all been destructive to working people. And it got me thinking, you know, you go back and look at the 2012 autopsy, the GOP autopsy, Growth and Opportunity Project. While they never really cared about diversity and immigration reform or outreach, none of that stuff, they did double down on we need to focus on the states. We need to exercise our power in the states and push this states' rights agenda. And look, I had an interesting conversation on election night 2016 with a Republican operative who said it's going to be interesting watching Democrats become state rights people, where Republicans have been for years. And it kind of has been a little bit. But Republicans were so far ahead on this. And you go, well, why are you bringing this up now? Well, I happened to come across a Washington Post article. And the Washington Post article was really talking about the stuff that we've talked about in this show with regard to vouchers for years. What we know is the voucher schemes that were being fed, they're benefiting the wealthy one and religious schools. And they did a deep dive into looking at, you know, the various states, you know, the Wisconsins of the world, the Ohios of the world, the North Carolinas, the Floridas. It's interesting how the 2008 scheme on how they're going to gain power, how it has worked out that the pendulum has swung in the legislature to get them the bad ideas they wanted. And vouchers are one of those. Vouchers are simply a massive redistribution of wealth scheme that makes sure that, well, the people who are already sending their kids to private school get a nice little windfall. Two, and you know, I would argue, you know, right at the top of their list, it starves the local public schools of the assets that they need, the resources that they need to be able to educate kids. Because the point here is destroying public education and profitizing it along the way. The goal for the GOP, for me, for decades, has been, how do we take from we the people? How do we destroy the commons, if you will? Parking authorities, highways, bridges, schools, hospitals. How do we take that from the hands of the public and put it into the hands of profiteers to where only the people who can afford these things, who can navigate the right systems and can pass the tests to get in, actually do or are in the right group. And I look at this and I'm not surprised by, you know, what the Washington Post found, that overwhelmingly the amount of money that's being spent on vouchers and being taken from public education is benefiting religious schools and the wealthy. And the question is when do we wake up and realize that these folks are serious, that they play the long game? Democrats run election to election. We fall in love with candidates in the hopes that they're going to be able to fix things. Republicans, they think long-term strategically on how to maximize profit for themselves, the people who are really in control, by pitting people against each other. It's working masterfully. I look at these voucher schemes. There are rural school districts who are closing up because they don't have the resources. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Right back.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors, the American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So evidently, big story over the weekend. Researchers at the University of Pittsburgh, they have found what they are calling a gold mine of lithium here in the Keystone State. Not an actual gold mine. It's lithium, but just they think it's a lot. In fact, they say up to 40% of our lithium needs right now could come from the Marcellus Shale gas well wastewater. Yeah, the wastewater. The report says the lithium is in the waste that's already being handled, and there's a real possibility of extracting said lithium from said wastewater, which could reduce the remediation costs, could reduce the handling of the waste, all that stuff. And I would have to imagine Ohio, West Virginia, being in the Marcellus Shale, I guess they'd have this as well. So here to answer the question, could this be the big freaking deal that the article seemed to make out of it? What is lithium, by the way? That's why I've asked our good friend Scott Paul to come talk with us. He's the president of the Alliance for American Manufacturing, AmericanManufacturing.org, the website. Scott, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, Rick, great to be with you.
So big deal or much ado about we don't know?
Yeah. Well, I'd call it promising. You know, there's a few steps between this discovery and being able to commercialize it and to extract it responsibly. But I do think that it is something to be pretty excited about. There's a couple things are clear, no matter how you feel about electric vehicles. Let's just you know, put that out there. One is that increasingly we're going to need high capacity batteries for lots of different things, if not for, like, you know, generators, for power outages, which seem to be getting more frequent. It's a good way to store energy that's produced from sources like hydropower and solar and wind and some other things like that. So there's a lot of utility to this, including EVs, and you need lithium to do it under kind of the most predominant technology. And right now we don't extract a lot in the United States. And the idea that we could do this and that it would have some benefit, I think, is really encouraging. The more we can control our own energy future, I think the better off we all are. And between that and I think some mining in Nevada, I think that's a really good first step, because almost all of the lithium that we now get for our batteries in the United States comes from overseas, and some ridiculous numbers, like 90% of it is processed in China. And so if we do some of the mining here, we get some of the processing here, that's going to make us way more energy independent and way less reliant on overseas sources that are becoming riskier by the day.
Yeah. Now, I also saw that they're opening up a mining operation in Arkansas to match with Nevada, because this is the future. We need this. And my mind kept going back to, you know, why this far into the game? Why this far down the road are we only now starting to do this? And I started thinking about during the Trump years and his foreign policy, which allowed China to basically go into Africa and other places and basically buy up all of the and look, masterfully, give the Chinese credit for being forward thinking, but buying up all of these relationships that we had foregone during the Trump years. Again, for me, the failure of that administration is magnified by the fact that you're right. The future probably is going to be EVs, and we allowed the Chinese to get the jump on us.
We did, and you're absolutely right about that, is that there was a period of time where where our administration, and in this case, the Trump administration, didn't kind of push back when China was moving into establishing the Belt and Road Initiative and establishing a lot of these loan agreements and other sorts of developments in Africa, and we really ceded that territory. And it was important, obviously, for geopolitical reasons and lots of different reasons, but you're right, lithium mining was one of those. And so we got left out there, and we didn't develop it here as much as we should have. Yeah.
And for me, this, again, is another reason that I'm not an isolationist. This is the repercussion for not participating with the rest of the world. I said it before. I'm a protectionist. I lock my door when I leave, but I don't have a giant moat around my house. I'm not an isolationist. But this is what isolationist thinking gets us.
It does. I think that's exactly right. And the fact that we were, not as not as aggressive in trying to develop these relationships with countries in Africa and others is, shame on us. And I do think that we need to set a different course there. And I also think that a lot of these African countries think now that they didn't get a great bargain with China when all is said and done. So that is an important lesson. The fact that we can develop this responsibly in the United States, I think, is also very important. And this is I'm just going to throw this out there because I think it's important. This is the point where everybody who wants a clean energy future needs to understand that there is mining involved to help to get that, or extraction. And whether it's from the wastewater in the Marcellus Shale or from a mountain range in Nevada, I mean, we definitely need to do this responsibly, but we need to do it. And that's the way to this. And so, there is some, I think that there is some call for, what I would say, permitting reform that's reasonable, not giving away right. The bank to all the big corporations, but so that we're moving from NIMBY to YIMBY under the right circumstances, right? Yes. In my backyard.
Yeah, I got it. No, that's a good one. No, but this is why I wasn't 100% against the idea of fracking and drilling here in the state. There are opportunities to get us the gas that was supposed to be the bridge to this new future. Get us away from the dirty burning oil. Get us away from the tar sand stuff that was supposed to come through this country and be the bridge to the future. And look, I still support that idea. I know it's going to take time, but you're right. Yeah. I think a lot of people think that we're going to flip a switch and it's going to happen overnight. It reminds me of the South Park thing where they're like, we're going to get underpants, get rich, without any idea of what the between was. This kind of reminds me of that.
Yeah, it does. That's exactly right. And it does take kind of, these are difficult decisions, and there are some trade-offs. There is no doubt about it. But all of this is better than either depending on oil from oligarchs who are price fixers, basically, who generally try to screw us, or to derive alternative energy sources from China and from a government that is also out trying to screw us many times. So we're far better off trying to develop that here.
Yeah, we had Representative Mark Pocan on the show the other day, and he was talking about one of the oil CEOs was, there's some investigation into whether there was some price fixing with OPEC, and you wonder why our gas prices are so high. You got the oil companies who aren't drilling on the leases that they already have, and you're dealing with a cartel, an oil cartel in OPEC. Are you surprised that they're going to be able to swing the price wherever they go? It's just remarkable. So for me to get off of the dirty stuff, start moving towards the future is a good idea, and doing it at home, even better yet. So for me, yes to all of that.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And if we both want to secure that energy future that people care about and good jobs, I think that is the path. And so it is a just bringing it all the way back home. I think it's an important discovery. I think it's worth commercializing it and developing it in a responsible way so that we have more say over how our energy future looks, Rick.
Yeah, and ultimately, you mentioned a second ago that with the lithium, we don't have the capacity to refine it. This is again something that decades ago we should have been, if this was the path and this has been in the works for a while, that should have been part of, hey, how do we get this infrastructure in place to help us move in this direction? And I got to tell you, this election for me, and I got to bring it back to the election, this election is one of those crossroads moments. I've been saying it's kind of like 1980 again. Carter put solar panels on the White House. Carter lost. Reagan ripped them off. And here we are all these years later, still on the dirty oil. I see this as that kind of moment.
Yeah. Yeah, that is I think you defined the choice pretty accurately and succinctly and clearly. It doesn't make a lot of sense to go back and to undo all of this work and this investment to give us more diversification in the United States, which is going to make us all better off, honestly, unless you're a big oil company who's only interested in fossil fuel from an OPEC country
and lying in their pockets first and foremost. I got to get your thoughts on this Temu thing. All of them, there's a whole bunch of these Temu apps, these Shine, all of these Chinese companies that are selling direct to people here. I read an article, and maybe you can help me through this. I read an article over at The Observer recently that says that we actually give these foreign companies shipping leniency. We're obviously letting the stuff in. We're somewhat subsidizing the rates, and let's not even get started on the intellectual property rights that are being ripped off every day. Why are we doing this?
Yeah. So these shopping apps have all sorts of advantages that I don't think most people are aware of. And I want to be, which are built-in disadvantages for people who want to do the right thing. Let's be clear about that. And in addition to avoiding tariffs and customs inspections, which they should undergo, by the way, there's also a cheaper international shipping rate that they get than even a lot of domestic shippers are able to provide, which is baffling to me. I just don't understand it. And so it's clear to me from all of this that the importers, the folks that make money by getting goods from countries like China into the hands of American consumers, have figured out a way to game this whole system, from tariffs to inspections to postal rates. And there's been a lot of light that's been shed now on this tariff question, and some light also as well on the customs inspection, which is important because there have been, I think, verified reports that some of the products that are being shipped in would otherwise be subject to the Uyghur Forced Labor Prevention Act, we're trying to avoid the utilization of slave labor ending up in consumer products. But we also obviously clearly need to do more with respect to shipping rate equalization here. That seems insane to me that they get better shipping rates than shippers that are doing this inside, say, North America. It's ridiculous.
It is ridiculous. But what's even more ridiculous is we don't have people in Congress who are going, hey, maybe not. And it comes back to me, and maybe you're the guy closer to all this. But I look at the number of lobbyists per the number of people, you know, representatives in Congress. I look at the money that's going into it. And I look at the fact that foreign corporations and foreign governments can lobby our officials. And there isn't anything illegal about that or unethical. I got to tell you, I'm not comfortable in any way, shape or form with having the Chinese Communist Party be able to lobby our representatives. I mean, I look at Mitch McConnell, one of the most powerful men in the city, in the Senate, married to, you know, a woman whose, you know, father is a shipping magnet from China. I got problems with all of that.
Yeah, it is. I would just say in general that it is pretty stunning the kind of foothold that some of these interests have in the American political system. And some of it is direct, as you point out. Some of it is indirect, and they have global companies basically, you know, essentially doing the same thing as they would because, you know, increase the profits for them. And the challenge is that, that is where a lot of the money is. And unfortunately, money plays a big role. Money plays a big role in politics. And then the other aspect of this, and I would say this, is that oftentimes, you know, you need balances and pushback in the system. And there are a lot of commercial interests that are afraid to push back publicly against China because of the retaliation that one would face. And I'm going to say that is not I think that is a legitimate fear for them to have, because there has been demonstrated retaliation. And so we also need to find a way to safeguard these companies from that type of coercion, Rick. I completely agree.
And I think it comes back to us, though. I mean, our addiction to cheap stuff, at some point you have to, I love all my friends on Memorial Day waving the American flag. Some of them made overseas. You go, if you're going to wave it, I don't know, maybe care about it a little bit. Thought?
Yeah, you're right. We all have to care more. I think that's true. And an educated consumer is a powerful consumer. But unfortunately, just the whole marketing culture is about deal now. And that's what's driven home. Cheap. So we got a long way to go.
With you.
But I do, you know, there's ways to do this, and things like farmers markets, farm to table, local crafts. You know, you see that getting a beachhead in more and more areas. So that does give me a little bit of hope.
I'm with you. Last thing I got to get to. Saw this story down in Texas, down in Mesquite, Texas. There is a plant under construction where they're evidently, this is the first in a number of years that we're actually opening a munitions factory. Any thoughts on this? The fact that we're ramping up productions of artillery shells? And I know that they're saying, look, you know, a lot of this is going to go to Ukraine. Is this something we're on the side of? Something where are we on this?
Yeah, this is a far cry from an arms race. Let's be clear about this, is that the replacement rate of the artillery shells that we're seeing in Ukraine is not sustainable. And we do, I strongly believe we need to continue to provide this assistance. And so we have to scale up this capability. And unfortunately, the sad fact is, you know, we used to have multiple factories making all of this stuff, and now there's like one. And so with Mesquite, it'll be two. And what this gets us thinking, and I know we've talked about this before, is like, what if we were in a combat situation like this? And then it gets a little bit terrifying that in a couple of weeks we could run out of this stuff, and we don't have the industrial scale capacity that we used to have because of all the deindustrialization. You can't convert a McDonald's or a Walmart into an ammunition factory. You can do a lot of other things with auto factories, steel plants, et cetera. But that is something that I think ought to be a concern to anyone who cares about American security.
No, and this is where I think what Biden is doing is the right thing. We are reshoring some strategic manufacturing. And I think part of that is in the event that something happens. And you look at these chips. That CHIPS Act, to me, is a national security issue. Because the smart bombs that we have are only smart because they've got chips in them. And I don't know if there was ever to be a conflict, and I don't want there to be. I'm not calling for it. I do believe, you know, the Teddy Roosevelt walks softly, carry a big stick. I'm all on board with that. But I don't know that you're going to be able to call up in China and go, hey, you know those chips? We'd like some because we want to bomb you. I don't know that that conversation goes well.
No, it doesn't at all. And that's a dangerous dependence. And so I do think that a lot of this strategy makes sense. And I want to make clear, this is far different than like an unnecessary military buildup. This is literally rebuilding some capacity that we lost that made us dangerously vulnerable. Yeah. And so we got to get that back right.
I'm with you. Scott, as always, good stuff. Appreciate the time. Look forward to talking to you again.
Great. Thanks so much for having me on. Appreciate it.
Anytime. Our good friend Scott Paul, president of the Alliance for American Manufacturing. Check out their website, AmericanManufacturing.org. Want to hear your thoughts. Good news on the fracking front? Bad news on the military thing? I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Back after this.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR, home for the Todd Allball Show.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
I'm meteorologist Rodney Price. Heavy rainfall a possibility over the next 24 hours, with showers and storms here in the overnight, lower 60s and southwest winds developing. Wednesday, another round of showers and storms, then skies will eventually turn sunny, highs in the upper 70s. It's 69 at our studios.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
Melissa was my neighbor in L.A. Her husband Jim would break open these $100 bottles of wine they just have sitting around.
A friend of mine and I went to his friend's house. Her dad put like a $500 bottle of scotch down on the table and was like, hey, I got this for you guys. Like, go ahead.
We're 18. We can't appreciate this. I've never had an alcoholic beverage in my life until my 21st birthday.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights 7 till 9 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
So I got a hold of a letter that 14 UAW presidents signed on to, a short but direct letter to Republican Senate candidate Bernie Moreno in Ohio, and really to the working people of Ohio, who really this November have got a really important decision to make. Keep one of the most pro-worker, one of the most worker-focused senators in the U.S. Senate, or elect a Trump wannabe car salesman. It seems pretty simple to me, but here to share some thoughts on the letter that he was a signatory of, I've asked Tony Totti to come talk with us. Tony is the president of UAW Local 14 out in Toledo, Ohio. Tony, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, Rick, thank you for having me on. We really appreciate the work that you do. Our members really appreciate you fighting for working class people.
You know, I look at this letter, Tony, and, you know, the reality is you're very, very, very few words, but directly to the point. You're proud of the fact that you make a great product in Ohio. You've got a long history of manufacturing, and there has been a force in this country that's attempted to destroy that. And to have someone like Bernie Moreno say, you know, he's going to be tough on China, he's going to be doing all these things to help working people, and then to look at his past, well, I think you guys laid it out in this pretty succinctly. There's a past there, isn't there?
There really is. You know, it's actions, not words, that we tell our members to evaluate these politicians by. And Bernie Moreno's actions are much different than his words. When he says he wants to be tough on China and, you know, he wants to restore American manufacturing, well, he had his chance, but he was selling those Buick Envisions from China. Sadly, we only make one Buick here in this country, and it's a Buick Enclave. People need to check their VIN numbers to see where their vehicles are made. And we're friendly with a lot of different, auto dealers around. You know, historically, it's a good relationship that we have. But you can't be a hypocrite. And these dealers that we deal with, you know, aren't running for public office. You know, General Motors and the Big Three and all these car manufacturers put dealers in a tough spot because they're making these vehicles other places. But that's why, you know, Senator Sherrod Brown, who's been against the trade deals, who's been against these vehicles coming in from Mexico and China, is really an ally to us. So it's your actions, not your words. And Bernie Moreno sold Chinese Buicks and lied about it. And he doesn't stop lying about it. And we're going to call him on it every single time.
And that's important to call out reality. I know we live in the alternative fact world, but actual facts are what they are. As you pointed out in the letter, the China Buick Envision, you know, was sold. You know he sold it. You know he did it, advertised it for years. And then, well, is now taking the campaign route, hoping no one will notice. And good on you for pointing it out. But, you know, this is the problem where I think we are, not just with the Bernie Moreno of the world, but with a lot of people in the business community, because it's all fine, well, and good to go, oh, we wave the flag, we care about American workers, but we're going to get all of our products and all of our cheap exploitable labor from overseas and then try and sell back to people without realizing that those folks need jobs too.
Exactly. You know, sadly, I've been at six different facilities in the auto industry because they closed so many of them because of people like Bernie Moreno, you know, not caring when it benefits them. It's all about opportunistic activity. He doesn't have a problem profiting from, you know, these vehicles made in China. If we would have made that here, you know, Flint used to be Buick City. Because we made all the Buicks out of Flint. And then they shut that down, and you saw what happened to the water and everything else. And that partially because of that decision to make these vehicles in China. Their tax base got devastated, and that's when the governor put in this financial manager, and they switched over the water, and that's how we got lead in the water. So in addition to that, we also had Lordstown here in Ohio. That they shut down and they moved that product to Mexico. You know, that's when Trump famously said, don't sell your house, inferring that he was going to do something to save the facility. And he did not. You know, sadly, when these facilities close, it devastates the tax base, kills schools, kills communities. And, you know, for this guy to profit off that, and then come back and say how it was wrong for China to be making these vehicles and bringing them in. He's a hypocrite. He's trying to pull a fast one, but we caught him, and we're not going to let him off the hook. You know, wherever he goes, especially in our region, we're going to show up outside of wherever he's at to let him know that we know, and, you know, he was caught.
Yeah, and good on you. And in the letter, you say lying doesn't change the truth. Speaking to Bernie Moreno, you said you sold those cars, you put your own profits before us and contributed to Ohio losing jobs and our plants closing. It's the kind of thing Ohio workers have seen too many times before, when corporate bosses are too willing to sell out the people who make their companies great in the first place. You said that there's nothing you can do now to earn our trust. You've shown us who you are. And we plan on making sure our fellow workers and our fellow Ohioans know the truth that given the chance to choose between putting your interest first and ours, you'll pick yours every time. This is the part I like the most. The last thing we need is another corporate suit in Washington voting against our interest. This is something I've been saying for, well, almost the entire two decades of doing this little program here. We need worker-centric people in the Senate, people like Sherrod Brown, people like Bob Casey, who know what it's like to come from a place where you need those jobs. So the question I have for you in this, do you think now we're finally going to wake up to the reality that this has been going on? And by choosing certain people to go into the Senate, maybe we got a chance to stop it? Because I find a lot of my union brothers and sisters are a bit jaded on this issue and have gone off to other issues. Do you think now is the time that people are more receptive to thinking that they can change this?
Well, we got a great one right now. I would put Sherrod Brown against any other senator in the nation. I think we have the best one. So his track record speaks to just his character, and it's really night and day on the two candidates. It's almost laughable, but we are in a red state, and we do have to get to work to get Sherrod reelected. I'll put his track record up. When you look at Inflation Reduction Act that incentivized the batteries to be made here, That's why my members right now can transfer back home to Lordstown. You know, when Trump said, don't sell your house, well, everybody had to sell their house unless you kept it. But then you had to maintain that one and hit the road and go to Arlington and Missouri and Lansing and Toledo. And you had to maintain two homes. And that got very costly because of the Inflation Reduction Act through Senate, Senator Brown supported and got helped pass. They get to go back home to Lordstown at that battery facility. When you look at the PACT Act for the veterans, when you look at the CHIPS Act, that's going to bring manufacturing of chips back here to the U.S., which we need. To me, that's national security. We need to make those here. And Sherrod Brown helped make that happen. And got a new facility going into Columbus, Ohio. You know, time after time after time, Sherrod Brown has been on our side, whether it's walking the strike lines in 2019 and again in 2023, demanding that these companies treat us fairly and showing their support. In contrast, Bernie Moreno's nowhere to be seen. Don't tell me you support the U.S. Worker when it's on the line and we don't see you. So, and not only that, Bernie Moreno was sued for stealing wages from workers. How can you be pro-worker when you're stiffing them in their paycheck? And this happened in the court of law, and he was found liable and had to pay them their wages. Now, as a union, we represent people all the time. And if a manager makes a mistake and doesn't pay somebody, it'll be in their check the next week, or else they'll have to cut them a new check. In worst case scenario, we could write a grievance. These workers without a union actually had to sue this man to get their money back. So, you know, the contrast is just truly night and day. And it's sad that we even have to have the conversation, because people should already know. But it's our job to let people know who Bernie Moreno is. Yeah. And let them know that we're really so fortunate to have Senator Sherrod Brown.
No, it's interesting that you, because I was going to bring up the wage theft thing and how, you know, there are reports out, not a great employer, kind of a Trump, kind of like a Trump clone on a smaller level. Someone who a little shady in the business world, stiffen workers when he can, speaking out of both sides of his mouth when it suits him, and whatever crowd he's talking to, there seem to be a lot of similarities. So the question I have, because we're getting this, I'm getting this a lot, especially with my union, the Teamsters, still playing footsie with Donald Trump and a possible endorsement. How do you go back to your members and say, look, you know, the reality is, I know that, you know, a good number of people have in the past voted for Republicans. How do you get them to start voting their job interest and the future for their kids on these issues when you look at someone like Moreno?
Well, you know, all we could do is break down the records and say why Sherrod's been with us. And here's the thing about our members. They saw Sherrod Brown on the strike line. You know, strike line's not like a union meeting. You know, you'd hope that everybody shows up to the union meeting, but we might get, you know, 50 to 100 each month at our meeting. Strike lines, everybody's all in. And everybody got to see Senator Sherrod Brown walk our strike lines with us. They know where the support is. We tell our members once again, it's actions, not words, is how you judge these candidates. Yeah. And when we screen people, we put them through our core principles, and you know, we try to hold up records. And there's not a single member that we have that will not know that Bernie Moreno stiffed his workers. And you know, it's we got enough liars and shady people in D.C. as it is. We don't have to add another one to that. So it'll be interesting. And even for some of our other members, you know, all politics are local. Trump supporters are Trump supporters, and I get it. You know, it's okay for our members to split that ticket if they have to. We're in a red state. We know it. But you can't throw away Senator Sherrod Brown. He's too good. And I think our members know it, and all union members need to know it. You know, when it even comes to the PRO Act, he's right there on the front lines for it. And, you know, we need to really get Sherrod Brown reelected.
Well, for my Teamster brothers and sisters, you know, I keep throwing out the fact that Sherrod Brown and Bob Casey here in my state of Pennsylvania and the president got the Butch Lewis Act passed. They helped save, you know, millions of retirees' pensions to make sure that they're not going to end up, you know, having to either go back to work or go broke. This is a big thing. And look, the Republicans were against it all along. Trump had 4 years to sign on to it, didn't. Mm-hmm. And now you've got a number of Republicans say they want to take that back. So for me, when you look at the records, just the pure absolute facts, there really isn't a choice. There's a guy who walked a picket line, as you pointed out. Sherrod Brown did. Joe Biden found the comfortable shoes, walked the picket line. And then you've got the other side that has done everything they can do to swing the pendulum to the side of corporate America and the very wealthy against working people. It doesn't seem like there's a choice.
Well, for us, I mean, the informed, there isn't. But we need to cascade that over to the people that don't watch this all the time and don't pay attention and might tune in right after Labor Day. We need to be there ready for them to tell them why. And not only that, to mobilize them and their circles so they can let everybody know the good works of Sherrod and the shady happenings of Bernie Moreno. It would be not a good time in Ohio if we had Bernie Moreno and J.D. Vance representing us in D.C.
I keep going there myself. If there's a Dave McCormick instead of Bob Casey here, same there, because the Senate, a big deal this time around. In the event that Trump is elected, we're going to need a barrier, and having a true workers' champion in the Senate is really important to me. Last line of question I've got for you. Right now, we're seeing a lot of investment being rolled out. We're seeing a lot of things, as you pointed out, the Inflation Reduction Act, the CHIPS Act, all of this stuff. Do you think especially in talking to your members, do you think that the fact that it's starting to really make an impact now, do you think it'll be something that will be seen by election time, or is it going to be too late, do you think, come November?
Well, it'll be interesting. In the inflation that's taking place is hitting a lot of people that don't belong to a union.
Yeah.
You know, at least we got to go to the table in 2023 and demand fair wages for the profits from the companies that are making all these profits. So not everybody has that, right? Only less than, 11% is organized. And it's harder for people to get their fair share at the workplace. So while unions are doing much better, average Americans are really facing the brunt from the corporate greed of just inflation. You know, ever since COVID, prices got increased and they never came back down because the corporation isn't going to stop making the profits once they know they can get them, which is sad. And I think that hurts, right? But you look at what we had 4 years ago and what we have now. It's there's a story to tell, and Joe Biden's doing everything that he can to lower prices on things and help people out. We can't go back to what we had. It's just a nightmare.
Yeah, no. Four years ago, I was not better off. I am much better off than I am now than I was 4 years ago. And it's so easy. And I think the reason they keep throwing it out is they hope we'll forget how bad things were 4 years ago. But Tony Totti, I appreciate you taking some time for us. Keep up the fight and the great work. I hope you come back and talk to us again real soon.
Appreciate you. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Tony Totti, president of UAW Local 14 out there in Toledo. I want to hear your thoughts. If you're in Ohio, are you buying the Marino thing? Are you think a baby Trump is what the Ohioans need? I don't. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Going to take a quick break. When we come back, you know the profits he was talking about, the corporate profits that don't seem to be trickling down and prices keep going up? You're going to want to stick around for the next one. Back after this. I'm Rick Smith. And this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1904. That was the day when 900 Wisconsin papermakers walked off the job from Appleton to Menasha, from Combined Lakes to Nina. They were members of the International Brotherhood of Papermakers. At the turn of the 20th century, paper mills were an important industry in Wisconsin. The workers in these mills toiled long hours under grueling and dangerous conditions. According to historian Robert Azzone, quote, many had fingers cut off, arms burned, and bodies mangled by the open machinery and the hot rolls and felts in the mills. the workers started organizing into unions and conducting work actions. But they had little success bargaining with the mill owners. In the Wisconsin River Valley, the workers on the night shift were especially frustrated about having to work on Saturday nights. They wanted a reduction in hours and an end to the Saturday night requirement. And on this day in labor history, the union called for a strike to begin that Saturday evening at 6 p.m. Mill owners scrambled to find local mill workers willing to scab against the strike. But they had little luck. The strike began, and the workers walked off the job at 11 mills. For 10 days, things for the workers went well, and the strike was peaceful. Then the mill owners brought in replacement workers from out east. Skirmishes broke out between the scabs and the strikers. The scab replacement workers had taken away the leverage that the striking workers had had against the mill owners. Some of the strikers began to return to the mills, and the strike was defeated. Within 3 years, the Brotherhood of Papermakers would close its last lodge in Wisconsin, but worker organizing within the paper industry would continue forward. Labor History in 2, brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Check out our website, thericksmithshow.com. So, you know, as I said in the last bit, if inflation has got you down, if price gouging's got you down, interesting story over at the Lever News. Veronica Rikabin has a piece, Big Food, Big Profit, Big Lies, where she goes through and goes, you know, look, you know, here's the reality. Corporate America has been blaming inflation on the pandemic. You know, the rising prices, it's the pandemic, it's inflation that's causing the rise of foods. And what she has investigated and what she's laid out is what we've been talking about here on the program for months. The fact that corporate America sees a really good opportunity to stick it to the American people. And she says, look, you know, while, you know, doing this, they're lining their pockets in an amazing route. She points out that we as Americans paid about 25% more in groceries and dining out this past March than we did in January of 2020, and way outpacing general inflation. She points out that over the same period, companies that are behind the country's 10 largest grocery and restaurant brands have together have returned some $77 billion to shareholders. Now, the idea here, and stock buybacks, something regular viewers and listeners know, something I keep saying should be taxed out of existence and never allowed to happen. This is what this is. This is massive amounts of money that are being extracted from the profits and just handed out. It's this shareholder primacy idea. This idea that everything is about maximizing shareholder value, keeping the wealthy well-to-do, even if it is at the expense of all working people. She points out an analysis by Food and Water Watch that points out that the average cost of food for a family of four living on what they call a thrifty budget increased 50% from January 20 to January 24. And you go, that seems like an awful lot. That went from $654 a month up to $976 a month. And you go, well, gee, where'd that go? Well, we know it's going into the pockets of these big corporations. We're seeing the numbers. And the Groundwork Collaborative, who we've had on this program before, they've talked about this. They've listened to those shareholder meetings where corporate America is going, hey, you know, in defense of the market, we need to raise prices, even though our profits are through the roof. And the reality is, as Veronica points out, that, you know, with our tattered social safety net and the child tax credit that expired at the end of 2021, hunger in this country is on the rise. She points out that the number of households facing food insecurity grew by 3.5 million from 2020 to 2022. And that children in these households, they're the ones who have seen food insecurity grow the most. And again, not surprising, But what I love is the fact that she puts this in one easy to read, very simple. Here are the facts. The fact, for instance, PepsiCo, their CEO or their CFO, Hugh Johnston, evidently, according to her, told Bloomberg last year that consecutive double-digit price hikes on their products in recent years were just there to cover the cost of inflation. And that the consumers at PepsiCo, the consumers, they see Pepsi as worth paying a little more for, while they may not be able to afford the big luxuries in life. You want to know who got the big luxuries? He did. The shareholders did. As Veronica points out, in 2023, PepsiCo raked in $91 billion in net revenue, a 35% increase over pre-pandemic income. Profits? Oh, $7.5 billion they spent on stock buybacks and issuing dividends. So again, as prices went up, who got wealthier? Oh yeah, the shareholders, not the workers. And I know they're the easy one to blame. It's easy to go, you know, the cost of all these workers, you know, just, you know, it's bad. And I understand, from 2021 till now, the stock buyback increase, 843%. That means never let a good crisis go to waste, especially when you can line your pockets. And according to this report, it's supposed to grow by another $8.2 billion this year. Because again, these stock buybacks are a way to extract profit and directly mainline it into the veins of the shareholder and the wealth class. And as I've said a number of times, and others, and she quotes this in the article, there's no legitimate good use for these stock buyback programs. There's not. It's all about legitimizing sucking profit out of the company that isn't getting shared with the workers, isn't being put into competing for new customers because, hey, we're colluding. How many people, how many companies are in the soda market? What, 3-4? This is the, and you look, she points out Tyson Foods, same thing. Same basic scenario. You made these corporations wildly wealthy. They blame it on, well, you know, workers cost more, you know, the inputs cost more. Oh, fuel costs. Yeah, yeah, that's it. You know, we hear all of these excuses, one right after another, after another, after another. And, you know, it's not just a grocery store. It's not just them. It's just not the eggs and the milk and the butter that have gone through the roof because they can do it. Because they know, well, what are these poor working stiffs going to do? Go out to eat? Well, no, because if you look at what Yum Brand did, according to the CEO there, which owns Taco Bell, KFC, and Pizza Hut, according to Veronica's report, he said in 2023 that the company's price hikes were a last resort. In the same year that the company brought in $7 billion in revenue, a 21% increase over the pre-pandemic levels, and executives authorized a $2 billion stock buyback program. You know, just a little help. McDonald's, you want to go there? They have seen their menu prices double since 2014. Their profits increased by 59% in 2021 alone. And you go, well, Rick, what does all this mean? It means corporate America is gouging our eyes out. And they're telling us it's Joe Biden's fault. It's inflation's fault. No, the inflation is these people are taking the opportunity to go, hey, there's a crisis. Hey, there's someone to blame. Hey, there's a way to make more off of those suckers. And this is where I keep saying, until we as consumers go, yeah, I'm not buying this anymore, and go somewhere else, and we have a government that starts breaking up some of these behemoths and gives real competition back into the market, I got to tell you, not much is going to change. And this is where we, you, me, us, come election time, need to make this a central issue. Because you know what? I'm as angry as anyone about getting gouged at the supermarket. The difference is I don't blame Joe Biden. I blame corporate America. And it's where I started, and it's where I'm going to finish, because they're the ones who chose right after the pandemic to raise those prices on inventory that they had in stock. That to me, that says a lot. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, Rick at the Ricksmithshow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, that's the way to get to me. Miss any portion of the program, grab the podcast. And as always, thanks so much for being here. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. At rick@thericksmithshow.com.
This is locally grown radio.
WFHR 1320 AM. W248DE Wisconsin Rapids.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.